Hello and welcome to another installment of It's About Time, a DC sports podcast. I thank you guys for joining us. My name is Nate. I will be your host today. Josh is taking another week off. Work kind of getting away from him. We haven't been able to connect. But we will hopefully get together next week, do an update on the weight loss competition that he and I are involved in. And we'll, I'm sure, break down the Super Bowl, which is coming up this weekend, this Sunday, the Rams and the Patriots. I'll be talking about that a little bit at the end. This is more of a DC-centric podcast. Obviously, the Redskins are not in the Super Bowl, so we'll be talking about some local stories first. We're going to talk a little Nats, a little Bryce Harper. Bruce Allen had a presser last week. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about the Wizards and whether or not they should continue to win or whether they should embrace the tank for this year. And then going a little bit more nationally, how do you fix the mistakes that were made in the NFC Championship game? How do you fix that moving forward? Can you fix it? Are there options that don't change the game too much? And then we'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, how I feel. It'll kind of just be a casual thing. I said last week, I think that the Patriots should be the favorites. I think that they're going to win the football game. You give Bill Belichick 2 weeks to plan for anybody. He's usually going to come out on top, but we'll get into that at the end. As always, I want to remind you guys, we are affiliated with the DMV, sportsnetwork.com. That is DMV, sportsnetwork.com. They are an up-and-coming DC sports website. Check them out. They have great local content, great audio content with podcasts. They have Wizards-specific podcasts, Caps, Nats, Ultimate Fighting, all those good things during football season. They have a fantasy football podcast. So please check them out. We are happy to be affiliated with them. They blast our stuff out. We have a link on their website. Check them out on Twitter at DMV_SN. You can also check us out on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. That's ITS About Time DC1. All right, let's jump into it. The first topic I wanted to talk about, there's some traffic this afternoon on Twitter that Bryce Harper signing with the Phillies was imminent. But it wasn't really coming from any heavily reputable writers. Some people were taking clues from MLB The Show, the video game, that they had a big announcement coming tomorrow. A bat company. Josh sent me a picture. A bat company made two bats for Bryce Harper that had the Liberty Bell and Brotherly Love and all that stuff written all over it. It doesn't look like it's imminent. The Phillies, according to multiple sources, are still the favorite, but the idea that they've made the Harper camp a legitimate offer, we haven't heard that yet. We heard that with Manny and the White Sox, that the White Sox had offered Manny a substantial contract. There were massive disputes as to how much that contract is worth. I'm not even going to touch that part of it because who knows how much of it is disinformation. But we haven't heard yet whether Bryce has been offered a contract. We've only heard that the Phillies are interested. They're really the only team that we've heard are interested. The Dodgers this past week went out and got A.J. Pollock. That pretty much eliminates them. Joe Maddon has said again with the Cubs that it's not happening to them. He's not going to them. What options are left, really? So this is where I come in. I think it's time. And this is going to be shocking because I've been the guy pretty much since the end of the season that has said they should just walk away from Harper. But the situation has changed. I think it's time that the Nats should re-engage with Bryce Harper and see if a deal can be struck that benefits both sides. Harper has got to be frustrated, I think is the best word to use. He's got to be frustrated. I don't think he's doubting himself. I think he's frustrated. I think the way that the MLB front offices are going, 7 years ago when he came up and was with the Nats, the clock was ticking down. I mean, people were always saying in 7 years he'll be a Yankee or in 7 years he'll be a Red Sox or what have you. And the idea that he had free agency and has really had very little interest, I'm sure it's frustrated him. I don't think that it's put any doubt into him, but I think the Nats can strike now, and they can get a more reasonable offer. Early October, at the end of the regular season, the idea, the prevailing thought was it was going to take $32-plus million a year on an average salary to land Bryce Harper. The idea was he wanted to exceed the Giancarlo Stanton contract of 13 years, $325 million. Not just an average annual salary, but also in total salary. The Nationals did offer Harper a 10-year, $300 million deal at the end of the season with no opt-outs, and Harper and Boris rejected it. One question you have to ask yourself, does Harper regret rejecting that? I don't think he does. I think he still wants another bite at the free agent apple in 3 or 4 years, but maybe he does. Maybe he would just like to be locked in for the next 10 years with the Nationals till age 36, guaranteed $300 million. But anyway, at the end of the season, $32 million a year is probably what you were expecting, and the Nats probably felt that that was a little too rich for them, that they were set in the outfield with youngsters like Soto and Robles and a gamer in Adam Eaton, and that they had other people that they could spread that money around to, mainly Anthony Rendon, Trey Turner down the road. And then you see what the Nats have done in free agency. I don't need to rehash the whole thing, but obviously they give Patrick Corbin 6 years and $140 million. They massively upgrade their catching staff with the additions of Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki. They go out and get Trevor Rosenthal on a one-year deal as a reliever, Brian Dozier on a one-year deal as your new second baseman. They have, most experts would say they've had the best offseason in baseball. Some people are saying the Mets. I think that's nuts, but I'm not going to get into that. But the Nats are in great shape. They traded for Kyle Barraclough, lightning young arm at 29 years old, and he's under team control through 2021. That's Kyle Barraclough. But now I think you can get Harper at a more reasonable, at least front end of a contract. I think you could probably get Harper and in 2019-2020 pay him an average salary of $24 or $25 million, and then you have an escalating deal where the last maybe 3 or 4 years you're at the $31-32 million range, where the Nats in 2025-2026 obviously have no commitments yet, but also you're assuming the luxury tax is going to be higher. So a $32 million contract then won't impact you as much as it does now. My belief is this. There are two reasons I was against it. One, I didn't think Harper was worth $32 million a year. I still don't think at his current production he's worth $32 million a year. The reason I would say that, just looking at his numbers, if you take out the 2015 MVP season, which was an otherworldly season, don't get me wrong, but if you take that out, he is a career 271 hitter, 372 on base percentage. He's got a career OPS without 2015 at 858. Now how that comes in, 858 OPS, let's look at the active leaders in OPS. Bryce Harper is currently seventh on the active list in OPS at 899, essentially, or 900. He's 8996. But if you take out 2015, which was otherworldly, I mean, it was his OPS that season was 1.109, obviously led all baseball, MVP, unanimous MVP. If you take that out, he's at 858. So 858 drops him from 7th. It would drop him down into the in between 17 and 18, in between an Andrew McCutchen, Charlie Blackmon. Nobody would say that Charlie Blackmon is worth $32 million a year. Nobody would say that Kutch at this point in his career is worth $30 million a year. If you look at the top three, well, let's look at the top two, because 3 and 4 on the list are Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols. They're past their primes. If you look at 1, 2, and 5, Mike Trout, his OPS, 989. Joey Votto, 956. Paul Goldschmidt, 930, essentially. Those guys are worth the high dollars. Bryce Harper at 858, if you take his 2015 season out of it, I don't think he's worth $30 million a year. My second reason that I was against the Nationals bringing him back was I thought that the money could be better spent on somebody like Anthony Rendon. But in the current climate, I think that the Nats could retain, could bring Harper back and keep Anthony Rendon. And here's why I think that, and here's how they could do that. The Nationals this year, currently, have an estimated total payroll with options at $198.3 million. The luxury tax, experts are saying they're probably $3 or $4 million under the luxury tax currently. That doesn't include incentives and things like that. The first thing the Nationals would have to do if they re-signed Harper is they'd have to trade Adam Eaton. And the trade, when you trade Adam Eaton, you're basically going to be trading him and you're going to be expecting somebody to take on his full salary, which this year is $8.4 million. And you might get a decent prospect back. You're not getting a top prospect back. This is basically going to be a salary dump trying to recoup something that may turn into something down the road and might not. Eaton is due $8.4 million in 19, and then he's got team options in 21 and 20, or 20 and 21, $10.5 million in 21, $9.5 million next year. If you trade him this year, you shed $8.4 million immediately. And then the second thing, second way that they could save money this year, but also benefit the team down the road, I think, you look at Ryan Zimmerman. Zimmerman is due $18 million in 2019. It's his last guaranteed year with the Washington Nationals. He signed an 11-year, $135 million contract in 2009. He has an option in 2020, which the Nationals are definitely not going to pick up, an $18 million option in 2020. So he will be, if the Nationals don't do anything with his contract, he will be a free agent in 2020. There's a $2 million buyout if the Nationals don't activate his $18 million option. I say, so you're guaranteed to owe Zim $20 million. I say, you'd say to Zim, you want to play at least another year after this, maybe two. So I go to Zim and I say, we're going to tack on another $7 million onto your guaranteed money. And instead of paying you one year, $20 million, we're going to pay you 3 years, $27 million. Lower his target from $18 to $9 million this year. You get an extra 2 years of Zimmerman as a part-time player, kind of playing 80 to 100 games, platooning first base, power-hitting right-hander coming off the bench. That's essentially what he is now anyway. He can't play 130, 140 games a year. They need to limit him to 80 to 100 games. That's where he's going to be most effective. So if they lower his number this year to $9 million, and then you have him for the next 2 years as a great platoon first baseman, great bat coming off the bench, and you guarantee he finishes his career as a Nat, I think it works well for all sides. I think Zim would do it. So that's another $9 million that you're saving. So it's $18 million between a Zim restructure and trading Adam Eaton. So if you get Harper to lock in on a long-term deal, and you say, we're going to backload it. In the first 2 years, you're only going to make $24.5 million, let's say. They've already knocked off $18 million. So then you're really only adding $6 million to your payroll this year. So ask yourself this. In 2019, you're adding $6 million to your payroll this year, and you get to add Bryce Harper in right field, who is a very good player. And he's only 26 years old. If the Nats did those two things, if that was something that they'd be interested in doing, I think there's reason why they should re-engage Harper, and I think Harper would take a backloaded deal with the Nationals if the Nationals made the years and the overall number big enough. I'm thinking something in the neighborhood of 10 for 285 to 300, maybe do the 10 for 300, but you just have escalating numbers. You give him an opt-out after the fourth season or what have you. Whatever he wants. I like the idea of the Nationals engaging him. Now, the second part of the question, the second part of the equation, Anthony Rendon. I want the Nationals to make Rendon a long-term deal. Rendon, it came out, wants $23.5 million over 7 years similar or 6 years similar to what Altuve got. Rendon's already guaranteed $18.8 million this year. So going into next year, if you gave Rendon 23.5, you're only adding $4.5 million to what you paid this year. So you could theoretically, for $10.5 million next year, add $10.5 more than you would be paying out next year, I should say. You could add Anthony Rendon and Bryce Harper on long-term deals. Now you have to look down the road. The players that they've got locked up for big money, Strasburg is locked in till 2023. He has a rolling opt-out after this year and 2020. I don't believe there's a chance that he exercises that opt-out. He's not going to make more money outside of D.C. He's slated to make, according to Baseball Reference, he's slated to make $38.3 million this year, $25 million in 2020. I don't see him opting out. Patrick Corbin, he has a somewhat escalating contract. He really only counts $13 million towards the payroll this year, and then it escalates to $19 million next year, but he's locked in through 2024. Max Scherzer locked in through 2021. It looks like, according to Baseball Reference, Max is making $42.1 million over the next 3 years. But I thought some of that was deferred beyond 2021. I think that might be the case. This might just be what the on-paper value of the contract is. And that is actually what counts towards the luxury tax. Deferrals do count. In the current year, they don't count when they actually get paid out. So that might be what Baseball Reference is talking about. Point is, if the Nationals are willing to spend an additional $10 million, not even 10, I'd say $6 to $8 million this year, and an additional $8 to $10 million next year above what they already have committed, they could have Bryce Harper and Anthony Rendon under long-term contracts. What that does to their flexibility down the road, you've got two young outfielders, Juan Soto and Victor Robles, whose salaries, once they're through pre-arbitration, are going to escalate very quickly as if they turn out to be what everybody thinks they're going to be. You don't want that to be an issue. You want to be able to retain them as well. But by that point, by the time they start making big money, Strasburg's contract will be coming to a close. Scherzer's contract will be coming to a close. Corbin will be at the tail end of his deal. So the Nats should be able to make that work. And let's face it, baseball teams are making money hand over fist. The Nats, if they wanted to, could afford it. They can afford it. They're the richest owners in baseball. Harper, if he's smart, his price has dropped, and it will drop for the Nationals because he could stay with them. And I think he wants to stay with them. If in a perfect world, Nats should pull the trigger. At least re-engage, see where they stand. Maybe they are. And this all could be for naught. Tomorrow morning, they could announce a deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. But I wanted to get this out. I wanted to... 2 months ago, 3 months ago, this didn't seem like a possibility. It seemed like Harper was shooting for the moon. Now, how many suitors does he really have? How many suitors does Manny Machado really have? It just came out that the Padres might be interested in Manny Machado. So what, that's now three teams: Philly, Chicago, the White Sox, and the Padres? It's a weird offseason, man. But the Nats could have a steal with Harper, backloaded contract, deferred money, kind of a mutually beneficial contract. I think they should engage and see if they can make that happen. Either way, the Nats are set moving into spring training. I look forward to talking about it in a couple weeks when pitchers and catchers report. Nats are looking good this season. The NL East is going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be awesome. I love big games, and there are going to be a lot of them. You got to imagine the 19 games against the Mets are going to be exciting. The 19 games against the Braves are going to be exciting. Even most likely 19 games against the Phillies will have a little bit of magic to it. I think the Phillies right now are a distant fourth behind. In my opinion, it goes Nats and Braves are 1 and 1A, and then you've got the Mets as number 3 in the division. I think Phillies are a distant fourth. If the Phillies go and get Keuchel, Kimbrel, Manny Machado, or Keuchel, Kimbrel, Bryce Harper, then I think they leapfrog the Mets. I think it's going to be a fun year in the NL East. One thing I do want to talk about, but I want to talk about it with Josh. Hopefully we can do it next week. Is Davey Martinez the right guy for this? Because in a division that really is this close, it could come down to who has the guy that can keep the clubhouse together the best through an entire season. Is Davey the right guy? I'm hoping we can talk about that next week. I like Davey a lot. This is definitely his last year if he doesn't do something with the team, at least get them into the playoffs and a division championship. It's going to be a lot of fun, though. I look forward to it. A couple articles I wanted to reference that I read this week. Local articles. Barry's Verluga wrote an article after Bruce Allen gave his press conference last week. Bruce Allen had not spoken in quite a while. And he gave a 17-minute, 14-second question and answer session. And this is what Barry Zwilluga had to say. Allen has set himself up to be ridiculed regardless of what comes out of his mouth. Though to be sure, what comes out of his mouth is ridiculous. And you know what? That's by design. As long as there's a hashtag Fire Bruce Allen social media campaign, there isn't a corresponding hashtag Snyder Sell Our Skins campaign. The blame is placed somewhere other than at the feet of the owner, Daniel Snyder. It's worth pointing out, and it has been pointed out over and over, that Allen's record since he arrived in Washington is 59-84-1. That's garbage. A winning percentage of 413. And it's remarkable he will be given a 10th full season still seeking his first playoff victory. But Snyder has owned the team for 20 seasons. His winning percentage as an owner, 436, a full 41 games below 500, with all of two playoff wins over that time. Only Cincinnati, Cleveland, Buffalo, and Detroit have fewer playoff wins. That's your company, Washington. Look to the leader. I agree with Verluga here to a point. I never really thought of it that way. I really looked at Allen as being the yes man for Dan Snyder, a guy who validated all of Snyder's worst instincts and impulses. But he also does fit as a fall guy, as a patsy. I don't think he's a patsy. I think that he has done enough to warrant the negative public opinion about him. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, you could point to several things he's done over the last couple of years. The most recent, probably forcing out La Famina and the entire business side of the Redskins puzzle. You could also, he forced out Scott McLuhan, smeared him in the public because he got sick of McLuhan getting all the credit for the team's recent quote-unquote success because they had made the playoffs and won the division one time. Or signing Reuben Foster and making up some fake investigation that the Redskins did, vetting Reuben Foster before signing him, when the NFL to this day has still not finished their investigation into Reuben Foster. There are reasons to hate Bruce Allen. But this was an interesting point brought up by Barry Zwilluga. I had never really thought of it that way. Is that Snyder has, and I said this in a previous podcast, Snyder has appeared to be less hands-on over the last few years, especially since he brought on Bruce Allen. But maybe Allen is just a shield, and Snyder really hasn't changed. It's clear Snyder hasn't changed that much because he tried to, while still having a defensive coordinator under contract, he tried to go get Todd Bowles. He tried to go get Greg Williams. Didn't succeed in either one because nobody wants to come here, but he tried to do those things by himself and was willing to back up the Brinks truck to get these guys to come here. So maybe Bruce Allen has been his shield this whole time. And Snyder will continue to keep him on as long as Bruce continues to be the guy that deflects all attention away from Dan. It's a sickening thing if you're a fan of the Washington Redskins. It really is. Bruce Allen is not a good personnel person. And he's not a good person. He's just a dirty human being. I don't like Bruce Allen. I don't like the how he's tarnished the Allen name. I mean, George Allen is a legend in D.C. But I think we're going to be stuck, at least until the Redskins land a new stadium deal. If they land a new stadium deal, which is going to be my next topic, I think we're stuck with Bruce Allen. The only way out of the Bruce Allen fiasco, or at least a way to kind of neuter Bruce Allen's impact on the personnel, is if after this season, if it's a debacle and they want to go get a big coaching name, if the only way they can bring in a big coach is by turning over full personnel control, kind of like what they did with Marty Schottenheimer, similar to what they did with Mike Shanahan. That's the only way I think we get a neutered Bruce Allen, who is basically president in name only, and his only job would then be to secure a stadium site and secure funding for the stadium. It's depressing any way you look at it. I mean, Dan Snyder, he's even getting attention now out on the campaign trail. Elizabeth Warren brought up the $100 million yacht that Dan Snyder bought, spending $3 million on an IMAX theater, the first time that's ever been done on a yacht, and tied that into how Snyder donated $1 million to the president's inaugural fund. So the hits just keep coming. Dan Steinberg tweeted that. The hits just keep coming for the Redskins. They really do. The bad PR just keeps rolling in. But again, Snyder, if he's sitting on a $100 million yacht and he's making, what, $250, $300 million a year, does he really give a shit? I thought he did. I thought he cared about winning. I thought that the one thing you could not take away from him was that he wanted to win. But 10 years, we're going into the 10th year of Bruce Allen. I'm starting to think that that's probably not accurate. That there are more important things to Dan Snyder than the Washington Redskins winning another Super Bowl, one of which is probably his $100 million yacht. So that's a lot of fun. Thanks, Barry Zwilluga, for writing that article. I enjoyed reading the article. I thought that the excerpt was interesting. Little side note that came out this week as well. Not that it's any surprise. The Redskins are moving forward, not expecting Alex Smith to play in 2019. Not really a shock. He was a long shot just to make it back onto the field by the end of 2019. The odds are we won't see Alex Smith in a Redskins jersey again until OTAs in 2020, if we ever see him in a Redskins jersey again. I still think that there's a better chance than not that Alex Smith decides to retire, to medically retire. There's really no reason. He's got nothing left to prove. I mean, he hasn't won a Super Bowl, but he's going to look at the Redskins' state of affairs and realize he's not going to win a Super Bowl here. And he had a pretty gruesome injury. It's an injury that you would think would most likely end his career, which is a shame. I like Alex Smith. I think he's a good person. I think he's had a very good football career, especially after being the number one overall pick by the San Francisco 49ers. I think that he has made something of his career. He's been a success everywhere he's gone. San Francisco, Kansas City. He was a success here. Say what you want about him. The Redskins, when his injury happened, were 6-3 and were a game and a half up in the NFC East. They were on their way to the playoffs with Alex Smith as quarterback. He was a success everywhere he went. I wish him a speedy recovery and a full recovery. I wouldn't be shocked if he retires. Now, before we go any further, another reminder, we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That's the DMVSportsNetwork.com. They can be found on Twitter at DMV_SN. Great DC sports content. They are upgrading their website currently. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff up there. Our website has its own, or I should say our podcast has its own tab on the website. So check them out, dmvsportsnetwork.com. Check us out on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. It's ITS About Time DC1. Please also subscribe to our podcast and rate us. Let us know what you think. Send us a direct message on Twitter, or you can send us an email. Our email account is in our, or I should say our email address is in the in our profile on Twitter. So please check us out. Let us know what you think. Final piece I want to talk about the Redskins. is a question. Should a government, whether it be the city of D.C., Virginia government, or Maryland government, give Snyder anything to build his stadium, his next stadium, in their state or in their city? Should they even gift him the land? First thing I'm going to say off the top, based on how much money the NFL makes, there should be no public money given to the Redskins for a new stadium. There should be no public money whatsoever. That would be a joke. It would be an absolute joke for a team that, I mean, for a sport where you have 10 home games a year, 2 preseason games, 8 home games, and the sport is trending towards smaller stadiums because across the league, attendance, in-person attendance is down. There should be no, and not to mention, the Redskins are a train wreck. They're a joke. They have no bargaining chips. Their fan base is significantly smaller than it was 20 years ago. They have no bargaining chip. More people stay home to watch the game or don't watch the game at all. Would I love to see the Redskins back in D.C.? Absolutely. Would I love to see them on the RFK land? Absolutely. Do I think that the city should do it? No, I don't. The city council has said previously that they would not okay the Redskins coming back into the city unless they change their name. And they need to renew the city needs to renew their lease of the RFK land because it's technically federal land. And people in Congress feel the same way. We don't want to give free land, federal land, to a franchise whose name some people find offensive. So can they gift them the land? I think Larry Hogan has considered doing it in the National Harbor in Maryland. If they want to do it in Virginia, it's probably going to have to be near Dulles, which seems to be a joke. I don't think that any municipality should be giving the Redskins anything. I don't think the Redskins have earned it. I don't think that their fan base warrants it. Right now, the Redskins fan base is smaller probably than it's ever been, or at least in recent memory. It's definitely in recent memory. So if it's me personally, Snyder doesn't deserve a dime. I mean, he's making, what, $250, $300 million a year. He can afford to build his own damn stadium and watch on TV or go to the stadium one time. FedEx Field is 70% full most games. 70% full. And of that 70%, what, only 75% of those are Redskin fans? Depending on, I mean, if they're playing Dallas, it's 50-50. Playing the Giants, it's 50-50. Playing Philly, and it's not, you know, the end of the season when the Redskins are out of it, it's 50-50. Play the Packers, it's going to be 50-50. The Steelers, I mean, you play the Raiders, teams that have huge fan bases. I don't think there's any public interest in giving the Redskins money or giving them free land. I'll get off my soapbox. Another article that was written in the Washington Post this week has a simple headline. And the question is, why do the Wizards, why do they keep winning? I found that really interesting because you keep hearing about Zion Williamson with Duke. He's the next big thing. He's a freshman with Duke. He'll be 19 years old in July. I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to declare for the NBA draft after his freshman season. But this is from Neil Greenberg in the Washington Post. This is what he wrote. The last thing the Wizards should be doing is winning. Yes, owner Ted Leonsis met with reporters before Thursday's game in London and declared, "We will never, ever tank." But that's a mistake, considering the franchise's state of affairs, both now and in the future. According to Basketball Reference's Playoff Probabilities Report, the Wizards have a 21% chance to make the playoffs. 538 is more optimistic with a 58% chance. If Washington does secure a playoff berth, its likely first-round opponent would be the Milwaukee Bucks, Toronto Raptors, Celtics, Sixers, or Pacers, giving it, at best, a 24% chance to win a 7-game series against one of those foes. Here's what I'm going to say. The goal, if you're a professional sports franchise, is to win a championship. The Wizards have not been a viable championship contender since the late 1970s. This year, more so than most years, there's a chance, if you win the draft lottery, to land a generational player. Anybody that's watched Zion Williamson can tell you the guy's a generational player. He's built a lot like LeBron James. He's got great ball handling skills. He's currently 6'7", 285 pounds. The guy is a monster, and he's 19 years old, which means he's not done growing. Freshman at Duke, he averages 21.7 points a game, 9.2 rebounds. He almost averages a double-double in college, which is impressive, and 2.3 assists. His high for the season, he had 35 points against Syracuse, and that was in regulation. It was not in overtime. He also had 30 points against Wake Forest. You have a chance. Now, is it a great chance even if you tank? No. But you have a chance to land this guy, and any chance to draft this guy, you should take it. You put on opposite sides of a scale. The Wizards securing the 8th seed overall in the playoffs, losing in 5 or 6 games, and then it's same old next year. You've got the 15th, 16th pick in the draft. Most likely not going to be an impact player. Put on the other side. You tank and you've got a 10% chance to land Zion Williamson. 12% chance. I want the 10 to 12% chance to land a generational player like him. You pair a guy like that with Bradley Beal, John Wall, instantly makes your team a top 4 team in the conference. You look at what players like of Zion's caliber have done for teams. You look at what LeBron did for the Cavs. You look what Antetokounmpo has done for the Milwaukee Bucks. One player in basketball can completely change your fate. One player. When Durant got to Oklahoma City, when James Harden got to Houston, you look at what these guys can do. One player can lift you out of mediocrity, or in some cases, when LeBron got to Cleveland, they were god-awful, can lift you out of that and turn you into a contender. It's just the way basketball is, because there are only 5 guys on a court on each side at a time. The Wizards have got to... I hate to use the word tank, but getting the 7th or 8th seed in the playoffs does nothing for them. They're not going to magically make a run into the Eastern Conference Finals. It's not going to happen. If there was a year to tank, this is the year. This is the year to do it. This is the guy to go after. This is the year to do it. Will they do it? No, they have pride and they have good players on their team that will probably drag them into the playoffs. Josh and I say to each other all the time, it's a DC sports thing. You know, we never do what's right. We never do what the right thing is supposed to do. At least it doesn't feel like that, especially with the Redskins, the Wizards. I don't feel that way about the Nats. I think the Nats, again, I led off the podcast by saying they've had the best, in my opinion, the best offseason of really anybody in Major League Baseball, mainly because they're one of the only teams that's spending money. They've spent more money. The Nationals have guaranteed more money this year in contracts than like 8 teams combined. I mean, it's remarkable. I could spend 2-3 hours talking about how weird baseball's new approach is and how damaging I think it's going to be to the future. But I kind of got off track here. The Wizards should, if you want to use the word tank, fine, whatever. The Wizards should shoot to be a lottery team, to attempt to draft, to get one of those little ping pong balls and attempt to draft Zion Williamson. Because if you're not in on this guy, you either should be in on this guy or have a chance to win the NBA title this year. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're just a team that's treading water, and treading water is no man's land for a professional sports franchise. All right. Before we talk about the Super Bowl, Mike Pereira came out this week and Pro Football Talk wrote an article about it. And Mike Pereira has an interesting idea to try to solve essentially what happened in New Orleans, where the Saints got screwed over, the Rams end up winning the NFC Championship. And this is not a new idea. This has been an idea that Mike Florio with Pro Football Talk has pitched. It's an idea that Dan Rooney, the late owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, had also proposed in the past. So here, this is from the article. Pereira proposes having a video official as part of each crew, allowing him to correct mistakes in real time as sort of a sky judge. Sky judge, by the way, I'm going to interject real quick. It should be eye in the sky. All right? It's built in, should be eye in the sky. I like eye in the sky better. But anyway, let's go back. Pereira continues, not a replay official, an eighth official, part of the crew. He travels with the crew, he or she travels with the crew, and give him or her the ability to be on site in an enclosed booth with a technician to look at the play on television in real time and correct obvious mistakes that are big plays and involve player safety and pass interference, and to be able to correct some of this stuff. The referee would be able to, in about 15 seconds, correct a mistake. Pereira says, I think that's what needs to be done, quite frankly, to win back the confidence. It'll look a little strange, but it won't happen more than probably two or three times in a game. It would be a bit of a failsafe. I love this idea. I think people are right when they say that you can't give coaches the opportunity to challenge pass interference penalties or to challenge any penalties whatsoever. I think it is a slippery slope. I think if you did that, you could potentially be looking at 4+ hour games in regulation, and that's not what the NFL wants. I also think that some calls need to remain judgment calls. One, for instance, is the face mask penalty. There used to be a 5-yard and a 15-yard variety of face masks. Now there's just a 15-yard. If you grab it and instantly let go, then you're fine. If you use the face mask to bring somebody down or to alter their path, etc., etc., it's a 15-yard penalty. You shouldn't be allowed to challenge that, to parse whether did he let go right away, he only held on for 1 second. But that, you don't need to get into that kind of minutia. But a play like what happened last Sunday should be reviewable. It should be reviewable. We're not reviewable. There should be a guy in a luxury box or whatever, wherever they want to put him, that can throw a flag from 100 feet up, you know, and just say, that's pass interference. You missed it. Or in the Kansas City game, he radios down to the guy and goes, hey, by the way, it's not roughing the passer. He didn't hit him in the helmet. He hit him in the shoulder. Why not? NFL's got more money than they need. They can afford an additional ref at every game. The guy's just watching the game like we do. If we can make calls like that from the couch, this guy can do it with 18 different camera angles, as much zoom in as he wants to do. I love this idea, and I think it's probably going to get I think it's going to happen. I think that they're going to talk about it in the offseason. The competition committee will get together. But I think Pereira is right that there is a lack of confidence right now among NFL fans that referees are doing a good job. Certainly with me, the first thing I do when I'm watching a football game, which I think is the worst thing, it never used to happen, but you watch a play, especially a play that gains big chunk yardage, the first thing I do is I look to the bottom right-hand corner of the screen to see if that little yellow light comes up that says flag. Punt returns, kick returns, long passes. You know, you're looking for something, right? And it's almost like you're looking for a penalty more than you're looking for action. The NFL has gotten away from what it was supposed to be. They have tried to legislate certain parts of contact out of the game to protect players. That has led to more flags, led to more penalties. This would be a way to fix some of the overreaction. The play that happened with Brady, the back judge was behind Brady. All he saw was the arm go up over Brady, and he had to make a judgment call in a split second. Did he hit him in the helmet? He thought he did. He threw a flag. This guy, sitting up 100 feet up, would be able to look and instantly buzz down to the head referee and go, nope, 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 wave off that flag. It didn't happen. It wouldn't impact the game. It would kind of just be like when referees conference before they call a flag. You just maybe add 5 to 7 seconds where the guy's just listening in his earpiece, yay or nay, move forward. I like the idea. I think it's great. And I think they'll do it. I think the NFL realizes that there's a problem. The NFL is usually pretty proactive about stuff like this. I think they'll do it. I think they'll realize there's a problem. All right. Last thing I wanted to talk about, and I'll talk about it briefly because it is not local news, but it is big news. It's the Super Bowl this weekend. The Los Angeles Rams will be playing the New England Patriots in Atlanta. Interesting little tidbit came out this week that apparently Bill Belichick and Sean McVay have been texting each other all year. I think that's kind of funny. But you do have arguably the greatest head coach of all time, and you have a up-and-coming, well-respected offensive mind in Sean McVay. That'll be an interesting dynamic this week. Another interesting dynamic for me, Wade Phillips against Josh McDaniels. The Rams on defense, this is what has not made sense to me all year. The Rams on defense on paper are loaded with talent. I mean, you look at a front line with Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. Loaded with talent. They've got a good secondary. But they haven't been very good this year. They've been better as of late. But they haven't been very good this year. And with 2 weeks to prepare, Brady and Belichick are probably going to design an off, and Josh McDaniels are going to design an offensive game plan that's going to make it difficult for the Rams to stop them. I mean, the idea, at least the idea for that Kansas City had, and Romo talked a lot about this on the broadcast, and we could talk about Romo too because he's become a darling in color commentary, and he did a great job. I really enjoyed, actually, for the first time this year, I really enjoyed listening to him. I think he's coming into his own as a color commentator. He did a fantastic job, and I look forward to listening to him during the Super Bowl. But as he kept saying in the game, Kansas City was trying to take away the middle of the field where Gronk lives and force Brady to throw it to the outside weapons because they don't have a whole lot of talent there. The Rams can probably do that. If you take Gronkowski out of it, then all you have to do is stop the run. And then Brady's got to throw to not-so-talented wide receivers. That's probably their best chance. And also generating a pass rush, rushing only 4 or 5. Aaron Donald's going to be able to help with that, but you got to expect he's going to be doubled and potentially triple teamed all game. And Ndamukong Suh is going to have the best game of his career. He's going to have to blow up the Patriots offensive line. The Patriots offensive line has been playing like the best offensive line in football for most of the season. Brady has barely been touched. It also helps that Brady gets rid of the ball very quickly. The Rams defense is going to have their hands full. On the other side of the football, Patriots defense has played very well, this, especially over the last month plus. Belichick schemes it up great. Their defensive coordinator is apparently, as soon as the game's over, going to be named the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. It's the second year in a row that the Patriots lose their defensive coordinator to a head coaching position. Patricia went to the Lions this past year, Matt Patricia. The Rams game is going to, the offensive side of the football, to me, is all going to come down to Jared Goff. Young quarterback, biggest game of his career. I mean, whatever cliche you want to throw at it, but it is going to come down to Jared Goff. Can he make big throws in big situations? because I think the Pats are going to be able to stop Todd Gurley or C.J. Anderson or a combination of the two. I think they're going to be able to stop the run, and they're going to force Goff to throw the ball. And since Cooper Kupp has gone out late in the season, the Rams' offense has not been as high-flying as it was. So he's going to have to rely on Brandon Cooks. He's going to have to rely on the short to intermediate passing game, get rid of the ball quickly, because otherwise the Pats are going to be all over him. They're going to force him into mistakes. It's not, in my mind, I don't see it shaping up as a shootout. I think the Pats are going to play ball control a lot like they did with Kansas City. They're going to hold on to the football. They're going to try to wear down the Rams' defense. And it could limit the opportunities the Rams have. And that's the best way to put pressure on a young quarterback. Limit the opportunities that he has so that he is constantly under pressure, feeling like, I got to do something on this drive. 8 minutes have already been eaten off the clock. Because remember, the Pats, 2 weeks ago or however long ago it was, against the Chiefs, they came out and had, an 8-9 minute drive. Pat Mahomes didn't see the field till half the first quarter was gone. I'd expect the Pats to do a lot of the same. Run Sonny Michel, and then just do what they do. Their short pass game, screen passes, little slants in the middle of the field, try to get Gronk involved. They're not going to take deep shots. They're going to want to play a ball control type offense. Keep the Rams offense off the field, put more pressure on Goff. And then if the Pats get a lead, their front line can just pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. I think the Pats win. I think the Pats win probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 13 points. I would put it somewhere like 30 to 17 Pats. I think that's probably the score. They'll win another Super Bowl. Doesn't sound like doesn't sound like Brady has any intention on retiring. So we could be seeing the same story all over again next year. You know, I'm just counting down the days till he retires, and we can see an NFL without Brady. I feel honored to have been able to watch him play over the last almost 20 years, but it's a little monotonous now. It's just kind of like it's boring. They're in the AFC title game every year, and more years, about 50% of the time they're in the Super Bowl. I think they said it was something like their ninth Super Bowl appearance in the last 18 years. So, 50% of the time they make it to the Super Bowl. It's getting a little old. But that's where I'm going to leave it. Sour grapes from a Redskin fan who will probably not see his team in the Super Bowl for several decades, if it ever happens in my lifetime. But that's all I've got for now. I appreciate you guys listening. Don't forget to check out dmvsportsnetwork.com. That's dmvsportsnetwork.com. Follow them on Twitter at @DMV_SN. They have great podcasts, great written content. Check us out on Twitter. It's About Time, DC1. ITS, About Time, DC1. Follow us. Please rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Send us direct messages or emails. We'd love to hear from you guys. We appreciate each and every one of you that listens. We thank you, and we will talk to you guys next week after the Super Bowl. And maybe Bryce Harper has a new home. Maybe he doesn't. We'll find out. Have a great week, guys. We'll talk soon.